Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. And welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
You know, it doesn't feel like evening to me here.
No, it doesn't. It feels like kind of the middle of the afternoon, doesn't it?
Yes.
Well, good middle of the afternoon to you, Michael.
Yes, and good evening to those folks in North Carolina and Pittsburgh and
New York.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And good morning to the folks in Great Britain and Sweden and...
Yes.
And around the globe we go.
Around the globe we go. And, in fact, the first caller is not in this country.
Wow.
Wow.
Very exciting. I want to tell you, before we take that call, about
yes.
something that I was thinking about this afternoon. And that is how much being the parent of a very small child is like monastic practice.
Uh-huh. Tell me more. Well, yeah, and I could tell you my stories too.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's sort of you didn't get to sleep as much as you wanted.
Yes.
So you're tired.
Yes.
And schedules are interrupted all the time.
Yes.
And you're doing things that you wouldn't really choose to do.
Yes.
When you wouldn't actually choose to do them.
Yes.
And it's really important to do what you're doing and face each moment of life cheerfully and willingly.
Yes.
Yeah. That's
I have to give a big yes to all of those. And the experience for me, and I think I mentioned this last week, is a big, what feels like loss of control. And as you talk about it, it's the loss of the illusion of control.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, and a reminder that open-heartedness and willingness and appreciation will take us a long way.
Yes.
Yeah. When times are a little more challenging or trying, and then when things aren't particularly challenging or trying, when everything does seem to be going our way, then, boy, do those attitudes make life just takes it right over the top.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. And just a quick anecdote, I was out with my almost two-year-old today, and I noticed particularly when I'm out with him shopping, for example, there's a real kind of urgency in my body to, like, you know, get it done before he pulls everything off the shelf or he goes into a meltdown. And I just realized that it's not a requirement.
Uh-huh.
All of that urgency.
Uh-huh.
You know, if things are not going well, I could just go home with him.
Yeah. Well, you know, we forget when we're in whatever life situation that we're in that life situations are really common.
Yes.
Like most people have encountered a child that age.
Yes.
Yeah. Most
yes.
of us, well, all of us, actually, were children that age. And so, you know, as parents, we get into this panic that we're going to disturb somebody or upset
right.
somebody or, that you know, it's like if the child isn't having just the most perfectly wonderful time, there's something desperately wrong and we have to do something about it immediately. It's like, kids just living,
yeah.
you know, just going with whatever's going on.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great.
Lots of good reminders. Michael, when we go to the caller, if you could ask folks to turn your mic up a little bit, it would really help me out.
Turn me up a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
Unless you're just tired and talking awfully quietly tonight. I don't know. That could be the case.
Yeah.
But in any case, if they could...
Certainly,
turn you up.
I will request that. Are you ready for the first caller?
Yeah, yeah.
I'd like to welcome Corinne from Vancouver. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, oh. Sherry. Can you hear me?
Can.
Oh, great. Because I don't know how to turn Michael up.
That's right. Well, hey, you're fine. They'll do their magic.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm so grateful that you and Michael do this show every Tuesday here in Vancouver. I can tune in once a week, and I wait all week for it, and I savor every drop of the show.
Oh, that's great.
And I'm just such a huge, warm-hearted thank you for your willingness to do this show.
Well, it's
essential.
Our pleasure.
To me. So, I have a life situation.
Uh-huh.
We've actually met, we met very briefly, just to remind you, in Santa Cruz when you were at the Inner Light Sanctuary, you were promoting the new book.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
We talked very briefly. Your daughter and I have the same experience, mine a little bit older than hers. And I actually came to the monastery, and I did a practice weekend. You guys were in Africa.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, it was really, really important time for me. Anyways, this was happening for the last 2 years. So I have a friend in my life, this amazing, amazing best friend, who is like family to me. I don't have much of a family connection, and this man is really important and special to me. But I'm in love with him, and he's not in love with me. Mm. And it causes excruciating pain on a regular basis. And 2 years of excavating through layers, you know, it's really ripe. It's a really ripe place for conditioning to hang out.
Uh-huh.
And I've just spent, he does have a woman in his life, not regularly, but every now and then he dates this gal. And how it's happened in the past is when she's been in his life, I haven't been in his life. And that was sort of his choice, and it kind of worked out. And so she's sort of come back into his life again, and it's just been just excruciating for me. And I just constantly trying to find some relief from the pain of this scenario. And I just come through a really brutal weekend of excavating more layers of this.
Uh-huh.
And I just really wanted to call and chat with you a bit about it, because I could use some really deep, precise coaching around this.
Okay. Now, you started out telling me how important he is to you, and that he's like family to you.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing, whether it's conscious or unconscious, that that's a preparation for keeping me from saying, you know, it would be good to take a break.
Oh, my God, yeah, because every time I feel like I get right caught between a rock and a hard place, and I always want to pick leaving him, jumping him. And
you want to pick that, but you never do that?
I never can. It never can happen. Like,
because you feel...
I get caught somewhere, and he's the only one who can come and help. And so there he comes, or I get, or he gets caught somewhere, and I'm the only one who can help.
Uh-huh.
And
now, do you really believe that?
Well, it's been true up until now.
Uh-huh. Now, let me ask you this. If he moved to Australia, would your life need to end because you would get into situations and he's the only one who can help and he's not there, and so that's just it?
I kind of feel like he would still be there, but he'd be there through phone and through, like, internet. There's a uniqueness about him and a uniqueness about me, and there's very, very few of us in the world. Like,
okay,
this.
I hear that, but I also hear that the primary bottom line is pain, is suffering.
or a piece of it, you know, a piece. I mean, because also the tremendous joy and tremendous love and tremendous fun and essential teachings and essential lessons. And he's sort of like a few years down the road on the path that the both of us are on. And this is a path that's almost uncharted, as your daughter's finding out, but as you know, you live it. And to have that person on the road just a couple steps down kind of helping you when you fall into a pit has been a tremendous liberation for me.
Uh-huh. And so what I'm hearing you say is that the pain and suffering is just part of that.
Well, I don't know if it's true. I mean, I'm glad that you're picking at this a bit, because I don't know. I feel sometimes like the pain and suffering is me and my conditioning, and doesn't bear a relevance to our relationship. It's something I put into it.
I feel quite confident that that's the case. But my point is that there's not a willingness or an openness to consider that this relationship is actually not good for you.
Yeah.
And
it's not, because it just feels like it's so good for me, except for this
So
piece.
If that's the case, then I'm afraid you find yourself in a position where this is not an elegant expression, but it is the one that comes to me, suck it up.
Yeah. So basically, the way, or what you're reflecting back to me is that I can either suck it up or really consider that he's not good for me.
Well, that what you're presenting is the painful, extremely painful aspects of this relationship, and that it happens on a regular basis.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet,
periods of time.
And yet, you're not willing, interested in, whatever, not putting yourself in that position because of all of these other things that you really want.
Yeah.
So what it kind of comes down to is, well, then when it gets really painful, you just figure out how to get through the really painful. Now,
well,
part of that can be, you know, letting go of the story, disconnecting from that, whatever it is. But generally,
well, what ends up happening, but I don't have a lot of experience with this, but what ends up happening is I go and excavate what's coming up, and it's always, and maybe this is always the case when there's unrequited love at play, that what comes up is that, you know, I'm undesirable, I'm unwanted, I'm, you know, why not me? Why
her?
Yeah, why her?
That's right. And so, now, in any situation, when somebody asks me a question like this, people will say, you know, well, we were in a relationship, and then it ended, and we really care about each other, and we really want to have a friendship, but it's just so painful. And what I say is, take a break. Take a break. And because staying in the same situation over and over and over,
mm-hmm.
when you pretty much know how it goes,
mm-hmm.
and you know what the result is, you can talk about it as excavating, but it sounds kind of like you've hit bedrock. It's not like...
Well, that's it. Is it bedrock? Can I get to a place where it's like... I mean, last week you had that great advice about just, like, put so much positive in there that there's no room for the negative. So I have that kind of mantra about, like, I am wanted, I am loved, I am desirable, and I know the truth of it.
Sure. Yeah. Anything is possible. That is absolutely possible to do, if that's what you want to do. I'm encouraging you to consider that what might actually be going on is that there's more self-hate involved than anything else.
Right. So in order to relieve myself of the self-hate is to relieve myself of his company.
Well, yes. I mean, you could put it that way. What I'm asking you to consider is that the addiction to the relationship results in self-hatred.
Right.
And so what it finally comes down to is, do you want to break that addiction and let go of the self-hatred that attends that, or do you want to stay in that relationship and continue?
Yeah, I mean, essentially that's where I'm at today, where I've been a million times before. And my mind very much wants to break. I always want that option. I always want that option to be true. I always want to walk away. Please let this be the time I can walk away.
My dear.
Please let it be.
My dear.
And my heart says, keep going, man. Surrender yourself more.
My dear, you're an addict.
Is that really an addict?
I
don't know my heart from my head.
I would suggest that there's a great possibility that that is the case.
Really? Because if I let go,
I have
no teacher. There was a time when I went down to California
Here's the deal, okay? We have a precept about alcohol and drugs.
Yeah.
And very often when we're doing precepts, the discussion will come up about alcohol. And people will start down this road of, you know, I could quit anytime. It's not really that important to me. You know, I have a glass of wine with dinner. Not even every night. Okay? And the rationalizations get so out there that they hear those rationalizations themselves. And oftentimes we'll start laughing and say, okay, I've made the case for myself. So if you cannot not do something, it's not coming from the heart.
Oh.
If you have to do something, and that's not, I mean, we could go into strange places like, I can't not care for my infant child. Okay, but you know that's not what we're talking about, right?
In a way, it's close to it, right? Because what we're talking about is a spontaneous awakening here that was the same as the spontaneous awakening that he had.
Right.
That 3 days after I opened, he came into my world.
That's right.
And it's such a rare world. There's very few others.
There's always a story with it. There's always a story. There's always a story that explains my addiction.
Wow. Thank you.
Yeah. So I would just ask you to consider, just to stay with that.
Well, I have deeply considered it. So what I hear is you saying, two thumbs up, walk away.
Well, because there's that kind of compulsive inability to affect behavior. It's not coming from the heart.
Okay.
Right. Something to think about, huh?
Okay.
Okay, let me know.
Yeah, appreciate it.
All right. Take good care of yourself.
Yeah.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling, Corinne. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome Roger from Vermont. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's getting kind of rough. And I wanted to call because I'm needing some guidance about this 30-day retreat that I'm on with the Making a Change for Good.
Uh-huh.
It's my second round, and I was very inspired by our last conversation about the room with the lights on and the room with the lights off.
Uh-huh.
And I've been working with that as the focus of my retreat. And I decided that the focus of this retreat was going to be anxiety because that's a really big issue for me. What's been happening is, in the first part of the retreat, I have these, I wake up in the night and I'm very anxious and I can't go back to sleep. And I've been trying. You gave some guidance to someone about, you know, staying in bed when that happens.
Say that again?
You, in one of the radio shows, you gave guidance to someone about staying in bed instead of getting up and doing stuff.
Oh, okay, good.
So I've been doing that, and it was wonderful. I mean, it was just wonderful. I was like, you know, I had my, I did the somatic thing, and I would actually go back to sleep, and I was so excited. And then it sort of kind of ratcheted up a little bit, the self-hate messages that I was getting when I'd wake up and the fear.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of went to another step where I had my journal, my retreat journal with me, and I would write down what the self-hating voices were saying. As soon as it was like they just come to me as messages, and I would write them down. And when I wrote them down, it was like I would just kind of feel like I was in charge.
Uh-huh.
And it was a wonderful feeling. And I, you know, that was really good. But it's sort of like now I can't really do that anymore. It's like I do everything I can think of. I write the things down. I listen to my tape. I do the somatic, and it just won't let me go back to sleep, and it won't stop. And it's kind of like I'm so tired now that it's really getting to be a big problem. So I'm looking.
Okay. So how much are you sleeping?
I sleep about 5 hours.
Okay. So you're not in danger of dying.
No, and that's the other thing. I'm glad you asked that because I feel like now the part of me that's talking to you now is like the person who feels sorry for himself because he feels like he has this problem.
Right.
But I'm not always with that person. A lot of time I'm in this very energetic, happy place.
Yes.
And I'm like, what is, you know, and I feel like there's a lot of energy here.
Yes.
But then the story is, well, you can't have energy because you only slept for 5 hours.
Right. You know, here's the thing. Conditioning, this is what we know, conditioning is going to use everything against you. Everything. If you were sleeping 12 hours a night, it would be convincing you that you need to go to the doctor. There's something desperately wrong with you because you shouldn't be sleeping that much. Right?
Yes.
So it's going to use everything. Now, what we forget, what is so easy for us to lose sight of, is the fact that you are seeing what it does.
Right.
You're not going to get to a place where it's not doing something.
Yes, and I'm working with that one.
Yeah. So now it's on its little kick of keeping you awake, and then telling you you're tired.
Right.
And it's really a beautiful aspect of this that you don't even actually believe it.
It's
when you're identified, you believe whatever conditioning is saying and doing.
Right.
That's across the board. No matter how much you're sleeping or not sleeping, whether you're working or not working, whether you're hungry or you just ate, whether you're in love or you're alone in a cave. When you're identified, you're going to be believing whatever scam conditioning is currently running. And when you're disidentified, you're going to be able to see it all for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So now you're seeing the one about sleep. Now,
right.
You're seeing this around sleep at night in bed. There's also one that perhaps you've encountered with meditation. So the people who get to the stage of meditation where they just fall asleep all the time. They sit down, they take 3 breaths, and they fall asleep.
Uh-huh.
A big, big, big problem.
Right.
But that's the point. Conditioning is always trying to make something a big, big problem.
Well, you know, it's funny because my girlfriend was telling me, oh, you know, this is happening to you because you have childhood trauma, and you need to call a psychiatrist.
Is your girlfriend the psychiatrist?
No, but she was, you know, telling me this.
She read an article somewhere?
Well, I don't know. That's like a whole different story, but the thing was, I was believing that, and I started making, you know, making some phone calls, and then all of a sudden I was kind of writing down things, and I was saying, these are the voices of self-hate. But what they were saying was, you don't need to do this. Everything's fine.
Right. The same voices that are trying to make you crazy would say, you don't need to do anything about this?
Yes.
Or did it feel like a different voice?
Well, that's the thing. I went back and read it, and I thought, that's not the self-hating voice. That's actually me saying, I'm okay. There really isn't a problem.
Yeah, so that's the person you want to invite in the middle of the night when you're not being able to sleep.
Ah, okay. So that's the thing is, or what I'm hearing the problem is right now, is it's impenetrable.
You're believing it.
I'm believing that, yeah. I guess I'm not completely believing it because I'm telling you about it.
That's right.
But
when you're in it, you're believing it.
Yeah, when I wake up at 3 in the morning, I believe it.
Yep. And so the only way out, the secret, you know, the answer to all questions is that when you are no longer hooked, you're free.
Oh.
And so the real answer to this is, okay, I'm not sleeping. I guess I need to get used to not sleeping.
Right.
One thing that I can do, I may not be able to make myself go to sleep, but I certainly don't have to be in a conversation about being tired or about what this means or about what I should do about it.
Uh-huh.
I had this idea
that I tried this actually in meditation one day when I was feeling really tired, I guess, and I just said, I recently ran this program at work where I was encouraging people to bike to work.
Uh-huh.
And I found this voice that was like this cheerleader. And I was telling everybody, you know, how great it would be. And people came up to me afterwards and they were like, wow, that was really fantastic. You were just really getting people excited. And one day when I was sitting, I thought, well, why couldn't I do that for myself?
Right.
And I started doing it, and it was like, it was great.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, maybe I could do that, you know.
Now,
just.
And the thing about it is, the big item that you're closing in on, is that conditioning can't deal with you having a good time.
Ah.
So if you decide that you're going to take advantage of this time in the middle of the night, not to try to get away from it, but really to focus on it and concentrate on it. You're going to make this like a retreat. And so, you know, you've got your stuff there. You're going to write it down. You've got your tape. You've got your reassurances, and you've got all of this stuff. And you are on retreat.
Okay.
It hates that.
Well, I feel like that's what this is about.
Yeah, as soon as it can talk you into, oh, God, this is hard. This is wrong. How am I going to get out of this? What's going to happen to me? Then, you know, it's just in heaven.
Uh-huh. It loves the sob story then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and back to the dark room and the light room, you know, it's just dragged you out of the light and into the dark room with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Having a good time, enjoying yourself, taking advantage of the opportunity to take care of yourself, to see conditioning for what it is, to find new ways to get free from it, that all happens in the light room.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, this is good. I'm excited about it now.
Can't wait to go to bed tonight.
Wake up at 3 in the morning.
Yeah. It's like having a whole separate life. When most people know this, but the program that I was on in the monastery where I trained, where I would wake up every 2 hours and go out and walk around and, you know, wake up completely and then go back and set the alarm for 2 hours. You know, it's this whole thing, and I thought I was going to die, and I really believed that you have to sleep. You have to go to bed, fall asleep, sleep for 8 hours, wake up, and otherwise, you know, something awful is going to happen to you. And what I realized is that is completely bogus. Tired is just in people's imagination. you know, what the body does and what conditioned mind has to say about it really don't have very much to do with each other.
Mm.
And I began to love that, what I would talk about as my secret life, because there was this whole aspect of life that was available to me when other people were sleeping. Nobody has access to me. Nobody wants anything from me. There's nothing I'm supposed to be doing. And the night is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful thing.
Mm.
You get into the moon and the stars and how things change and what the air feels like and the drop in the temperature. And, it's the best.
Wow. And that's so great, because what conditioning has been telling me is everything's going to be terrible until, you know, other people are awake.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, once you get the hang of it, it's like, gee, I hope everybody sleeps in. Yeah, and maybe I'll wake up a little earlier. Maybe I could start waking up at 2 a.m., and then I would have more, yeah.
Yeah. Okay,
I need to get tired in the middle of the day, you know, just put your head down on your desk and learn to do the John Kennedy 10-minute power naps, you know.
Yeah.
Sleep for a few minutes and get up and go.
Yeah, I guess it's all about not believing the story.
All about that, always. Whatever the story is, always good not to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, thanks very much. This is just so helpful.
Oh, good. Well, it's great. I'm eager to hear how you do.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Roger. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
All right.
Talk Radio. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome Judy from Atlanta. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hey, hi, Sherry.
Hi there.
Something's telling me, why did you do this? You don't have anything really important to talk about.
Uh-huh. Well, we know who that voice is, don't we?
Well, I have been back from the monastery now for about a week and a half.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just noticing how much easier it is to stay at center when you're living in a monastery.
Yes, although many of us could attest to the fact that it is possible living in a monastery not to be centered.
Yes, I'm sure. I had this dream after I got home that that I had been to some kind of personal growth class and I didn't take notes on the most important part. And I came home with these heavy bags and somebody had to help me carry them up the stairs. And it seemed really overwhelming to have to unpack them. And then I noticed that somebody else was all really organized at her desk. And then there was a lock on the back door, but the wall didn't go all the way to the ceiling. So I think I'm just not feeling as safe.
Yeah. It sounds like things got shifted around a little, huh?
Yeah, I really felt safe there. So I started doing this little number and having the part of me had this idea of what it was going to be like when I got home, and, you know, my husband was going to want to listen to the radio show with me, and we might even sit together, and none of that was happening, and so I started, like, focusing on his addiction to sugar and cigarettes and got really stuck. And then last night we had the reflective listening call, and some of the stuff that was said really helped me, and I sat down and I did a reflective listening with myself being the speaker and then reflecting back to myself, and I kind of got past some feelings that I was having.
Good for you.
So that was a really really good thing, because I had been kind of conditioning, had been running this thing for a couple of days, being really focused on I think I wasn't getting what I thought I needed or wanted. And so I started being focused on what was wrong with him.
Oh, yes. Which is always a good technique, isn't it?
Right, but yeah. I got real stuck in it, and I felt real confused. And so anyway, go ahead.
No, it's just funny because it's just so how we're conditioned. You know, there's something wrong. Let's see, who shall I identify as the problem?
Right. I'm like, I'm going to have to leave.
Yep.
But anyway, what I wanted to ask, so I felt like I did that reflective listening training thing last night, really was helpful and kind of got me back to that. But I'm like Roger, the caller with the anxiety. For several years, I have had anxiety mostly when I take a nap in the afternoon, and it just wakes me up with a start. It's almost like a panic.
Hmm.
And I've never had any words to go with it, but I noticed when I was at the monastery, I had absolutely none of that. And now that I'm back home, the anxiety is back, and it's not like something is talking to me or like it has words.
Right. And are you aware during the day of kind of anxious or worried thoughts or kind of stressful?
Yeah, I'm needing to make a career change. I'm basically unemployed, and so I have some financial things that I drum around and worry about.
Uh-huh.
Like that.
And while you were at the monastery, you didn't have to worry about any of that.
No.
And then you come back, and the whole world is a reminder of things that are problems or potential problems.
Yeah, and some of them have piled up. And
Yeah. And so most of the time during the day, it's easy to kind of push that back or push it down or, you know, get focused on something else. Or are you aware of that?
I can try to become more aware of that. Yes, I think there is some stuff in the background. Yeah,
and that we're not even aware generally of tensing up against life. You know, kind of wake up in the morning and then the tension starts setting in. You know, somebody says something and there's a little, and then there's a thought about that and a little, and then you know you turn on the news. You know, and
I've noticed that I don't really want to answer the phone. I don't really want to go out much.
Yeah, because the stimulation, you can feel what the stimulation is doing to your system.
Yes.
Yeah, and at the monastery, because it's so quiet and there's so little external stuff going on, that it is easier for the system to quiet.
And I think the structure helps, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There, having everything, you know, pretty clearly laid out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's not a lot to worry about.
Right.
Yeah, and so, you know, it could be as simple as that. And then when you relax, you relax in the nap, you go to sleep, and then what brings you back to yourself, and that's, you know, it has to be, kind of be in quotes, but back to that conditioned persona, boom, there it is. You know, it kind of comes in and takes hold of your body.
It's like a panic, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, to me, the best thing that we can do for ourselves under those circumstances is to be prepared and be ready to be the person who gets frightened of that.
Okay.
And it can become like, you know, when I was saying to Roger, you know, can't wait to go to bed tonight and see what happens. We can get into that kind of relationship with something like that. So you get to know the part of you who's afraid that that's going to happen. You know, probably somebody doesn't want to lie down and take a nap. Because
right. That's, I used to love taking naps, and now it's like I kind of, there's some dread there.
Yeah. And so to find out who that person is, who's afraid, and then begin to make it a project that you do together. So when you lie down, you talk to that person and talk about how this could happen, and it's okay, it's just something that happens, and there's just a shot of adrenaline through the body, and probably wake you up, and you're going to be there together when you wake up, and you'll talk about what happened, and, you know, start looking for subtleties, you know, what changes in the body, changes in thinking patterns, and just whatever you can notice about it, to make it something that is like a little mini workshop, like a little guided imagery or that sort of thing, where you're going to focus all of your attention and awareness on it and just see what it reveals to you.
You mean when it happens?
Yeah, and to make it a project, it can be part of a larger project to begin to have a different relationship with your with the levels of tension in your body, with anxiety, with worried, anxious thoughts, and to begin to use those kinds of things to bring you back to yourself and back to an attitude of comfort or reassurance for yourself.
Okay.
To make sure that you're not leaving some little person stuck with a bunch of giant problems that she can't solve.
Yeah.
You know, because
that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, because we often do that. You know, I don't want to think about that. And in the meantime, there's some little kid in there just, you know, biting her fingernails down to the
yeah.
Yeah. And so having it as part of a larger program and then really focused on how it manifests in sleeping and particularly in dreams, because that, God knows, that was an anxiety dream that you described, and then particularly how it shows up in the napping.
I didn't hear the last thing you said.
How it shows up in the napping.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, that's good. That's helpful.
Project. We love projects. And if it's a project that really leads to greater clarity about something that is so kind of pervasive and painful in your life, that's good.
Yes, yes. So when you say be sure you're not leaving some little kid with some big problems that she can't solve, you mean this project, like encompassing the other things I'm worried about as well as the anxiety?
Yeah, yeah. So my suspicion is that is what's going on. You know,
yeah,
you come back,
when you
you've
say
got
that,
financial
it makes
stuff,
sense.
You've got the relationship stuff, you've got all of that, but you're focused on this other stuff, you know, because you're trying to get through the day and trying to make things happen and be responsible, and so all of that worry and concern and anxiety gets kind of pushed off onto a young person.
Okay, okay.
And then it shows up in the dreams and in the way you wake up from the nap, and so it's just sort of the spotlight. So the nap is shining a spotlight on this issue. The dreams are a spotlight on the issue, and that's going to help you bring more conscious awareness to your relationship with anxiety and worry and stress and tension all day long.
Okay.
Yeah, and so it might turn into something like bringing more consciousness to the exhalation, to relaxing the body, checking in and remembering to let the body relax.
Okay. All right.
Good.
Okay, thank you very much.
I just know how you do it. Nothing was going on, so why call, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thanks.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Judy. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we have about 7 minutes left, and we have one more caller.
Perfect.
I'd like to welcome Janet from New Hampshire. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening.
Good evening, Sherry. Good evening, Michael.
Hi.
What is going on in the Northeast?
Oh, my God, this is just so perfect because I wanted to talk about how I'm doing the 30-day retreat, and I'm working with worrying and dropping worrying.
Oh, uh-huh.
That's what I'm doing.
You mean you're a compulsive weigher?
Oh, worrying.
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 I see. Not weighing.
No, not weighing.
Okay.
Worrying.
You can see that now I'm on a completely different program here now that I have that cleared up.
Okay. And the funny thing is, I called really early. I mean, I called like right at 8 o'clock, and I thought that I was probably going to be the first caller. And so I've been waiting and waiting and waiting, and all of a sudden, and I've got, you know, what I'm going to be talking about, and all of a sudden I just started laughing. I said, my God, I'm worrying that I'm not going to get on the show. Because I called
worrying.
One other time and they left me in caller land. And I, you know, I never got on or something.
Uh-huh.
So I was just sitting there listening to you with your last caller, breathing, going, that's right, I'm not worrying.
Uh-huh.
It's so much fun because I'm not worrying and I get to see how I worry all the time. It's like worry is the, it just pops up immediately. It's like,
it's the default setting, as they say.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It is there with everything, and it's so quick and it's so fast, and lots of times I don't catch it, and lots of times I do. And you were talking to somebody, which I'm why I love the phone show, is a couple weeks ago, well, when Michael had his baby, and he said he was doing the 30-day retreat. And I just thought, my God, I could be doing the 30-day retreat. I'm waiting for August. So,
and
you know, there's August. Like, oh, my God, I'm going to start the 30-day retreat tomorrow. So then the next week I came on late and I heard you talking to somebody and he was saying, yes, I'm just letting go of something for a year. And I can't remember what he said. He was dropping something, you know, and just not being concerned with it for this amount of time.
That's right. And when it comes up, oh, I'm sorry, I don't have to worry about that.
That's it. And so I was listening to him, and I thought, I love that. I'm going to do that. So that's sort of been my mantra. The worry comes up, and I'm like, oh, that's right, I'm not worrying.
Yeah.
And now I've told other people, and they are reflecting it to me all the time, and they're just thinking that's the most fun. Because, you know, I'll be with someone and I'll start to worry and they'll look at me and they'll say, Janet, remember you're not worrying. And I'll go, oh my God, I'm not worrying.
That is some very helpful support, isn't it?
Is it so fun? And it's like, but what happened is I went to Kropalo a couple of weeks ago and we did this silent retreat and the woman we were with, she just said, just lay everything down for the weekend. And I think it was just the way she said it and the fact that I walked in with so many concerns. And I realized that just having that someone say, oh, just lay it down. You know, like when you go to the monastery, oh, just leave your cell phone, just leave your,
right.
You know, you don't need to worry about any of this right now. It, just like the last caller was saying,
uh-huh.
You know, you don't have to worry about anything, that you can actually just do this yourself.
Right.
And just say, oh, no, I'm just not going to worry about this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the thing that to me is so fun about your friends reflecting that for you is that it points out that it really is true, that it is something we don't need to do. Now, most people believe that worrying is important. It's a necessary activity for thoughtful, intelligent people. But to say, I'm not doing it for a year, it's like, biting your fingernails or smoking cigarettes or whatever, you know, eating chocolate. I'm just not doing that for a year. And you have a sense of how irrelevant it is as an activity.
Yes. I absolutely see it.
Yeah.
I see that, and I see how it is the default setting, which has been interesting. But one thing I really wanted to get before we have to get off is I have been starting to have some dreams, and the dreams are the worry dreams.
Yes.
You know, like somebody's making a road right in my backyard, and they're putting in a subdivision. You know, and those, I mean, like big things. And I'll wake up in the morning, and I'll be like, whoa, that was a big worry dream.
Yeah.
Because so is it coming out and...
Yeah, if you're not going to do it during the day, by golly, then we got to get that worry in at some point during those 24 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking it was the one night I woke up and I was like, oh my God, I'm worrying about worrying.
Yeah. And I predict that that will pass.
That will pass.
Yeah. That if there will be a period of time where that habit tries to maintain itself in any way it can. So, you know, it'll try to get you to go unconscious so that you'll worry and not notice it. And it'll try to do it during dreams and that sort of thing. And then as you break the worry habit, you'll stop having the worrying, anxious dreams.
Okay. Okay, that's going to be interesting to see.
Not that you won't have them periodically, because as far as I know, just about everybody has them periodically, but not as a regular activity.
Oh, no, yeah, these are real vivid, and they're big.
Yeah.
And I just remember being with you at some point, and somebody else was talking to you about that, so I thought, I bet this is all together here.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And often when people are in a period of kind of intense practice, the dreams will get particularly crazy. People often report when they're on retreat that their dream life just goes nuts.
Okay, that's good to know, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I've really upped the meditation and, yeah.
Yeah. Now, for everybody who's listening, as I said earlier, it's not either or. Just because you do the 30-day retreat now doesn't mean we can't all do it together in August.
Oh, I know. I'm looking forward to that. It was just so funny because until Michael said something, I didn't even think of doing it now. Isn't that, I mean, that's amazing.
I'm saving myself for August.
No, I can't do it now. Okay, is that music on because we're done?
I hear the music.
Oh, I'm so glad I got on.
Yeah, me too. Thanks, Janet.
Great to talk to you. Good night.
Thanks for calling, Janet. You've been listening to another great Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Thank you, Sherry.
Talk to you next week, Michael.
Okay, good night, Sherry.
Thank you.